Pibs. This is not going to record itself. I have to record this now. Okay. Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. My co-producer here today is Pibs, my cat, and I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and it's a double feature today. Have you been snacking on wild raspberries or service berries? We'll leave plenty for the bears and birds, okay? I just got back from 5 days being immersed among gifted writers at the Elk River Writers Workshop over at Chico Hot Springs Resort. Holy smokes, what an experience. I highly recommend it. I met some wonderful new friends, and one of them said her favorite writer is Thoreau. Well, this one's for you, Donna. Here is the latest Desert Oracle Radio episode, produced by Ken Lane on August 15th, 2025. It's titled Walking the Wildlands with Henry David Thoreau.
Night has fallen on the desert, and this is the time of year when people are disappointed in me because I'm not going fast enough for their taste. Friends, it's so hot in the Mojave this time of year that merely getting through the day is a victory of sorts. The radio studio is too hot. Despite the miracle of air conditioning taking the temperature down 30 degrees or so, because of course the AC has to be shut off. Gotta shut it off for the radio work. Otherwise, that maddening hum will be in the background. Now, the mail order office, which is the other end of the studio, is also very unpleasant, and not just because laborious work must be done there. The dry, hellish air reduces the natural tears, and then it becomes the unpleasant form of email tears, which are blood. A mere crust of blood, like on a dead animal you come across on the trail. The hotter it gets, the more I like to think about trees. Tall, shady cottonwoods, dense green leaves, and well, I'm stretched out along the river, just enough breeze to keep the flies off. A shady glen. That's a nice phrase, isn't it? Glen is Gaelic for a green valley of the kind you find in Ireland or Scotland or the Isle of Man. Or a stately grove, like the Mariposa Grove within Yosemite National Park. We venerate trees because that's what we do. There's a lovely little town in the Owens Valley called Lone Pine. And it's named for the solitary pine at the mouth of the canyon, a tree that has been gone for at least 160 years now. You've probably heard of Abraham from the Bible. He was inspired to travel from the city of Ur to the famed Oracle Oak of Canaan to talk to God. And sure enough, God was there, the God of Abraham anyway. Diviner's Oak, the teaching tree, there are different ways to translate it. You can also mistranslate it, as both the Wycliffe and King James translations did, I believe on purpose. In the Wycliffe translation, Genesis 12:6's Oak of Teaching somehow becomes Noble Valley. And in the King James Version, it's Plains of Moreh. Mistranslating the first word and not bothering to translate Moreh at all, because it means oracle. Abram went on pilgrimage to the great oracle beneath Mount Gerizim, where the Canaanites travel to sacrifice and seek guidance from the famed oracular tree at this crossroads of the ancient world. That's where you went to talk to the gods, to one of the great tree oracles. Like the Oaks of Dodona, the great oracle in that mountain grove dedicated to Zeus, the ancient oracle of Father Zeus, God the Father, mentioned with reverence in Homer's Iliad. Mount Gerizim is where the Samaritans live and worship to this day. There, the ancient Hebrews left behind during the Babylonian exile. Their Ten Commandments, older than the version in the Torah, ends with the command to worship and sacrifice atop Mount Gerizim, outside, upon the high place, amongst the stately trees. If you're wondering why you never heard this stuff in Sunday school, it's because of a great conspiracy. I kid you not, a deliberate conspiracy to obscure the veneration of nature that's right there in the Bible. Jesus in the wilderness, his favorite place, where he talked with God and the angels and the devil. John the Baptist, too. The baptizing was the public part. Most of the time, he was alone in the wilderness, eating locusts and wild honey, like a great wild bear.
Desert Oracle Radio.
The Oracle Oak appears several other times in the Old Testament. Remember, the greatest kings of the Hebrews were mostly unrepentant polytheists who placed a pair of tree trunks right there as part of the altar in the Holy of Holies. Which is why so many biblical prophets rail against this, the bringing of the Asherah tree into the sanctuary. Asherah was Yahweh's queen, the Hera to his Zeus. She was deprecated. Her worship was discouraged. But intriguing evidence keeps turning up, like the wonderful pottery from the Sinai featuring a rare illustration of Yahweh as a great humanoid bull god walking hand in hand with, as the text says, his Asherah. Behind them, a courtly musician sings and plays the lyre seated on a fancy chair. Created by an artist of no great artistic skill at the end of the 9th century BC, or the time of Homer, when Homer was singing of Zeus and Hera. Anyway, Abram built his altar of stone at the Oracle Oak, the Tree of Moreh, and sacrifice there and was rewarded by an appearance of the angel of God. This location was so venerated that many centuries later, the battles in the Book of Judges, chapter 6 and 7, notably take place at the Hill of Moreh, the high place named for its oracular tree, Elon Moreh in Hebrew, or Moreh, according to the French guy on the internet who pronounces things in a charmingly thick accent. Terebinth of the teacher. Terebinth meaning venerable tree or trees, depending on the verse. In Judges 9, it's described this way in the Wycliffe Bible. And again, Gaal said, "Lo, a people cometh down from the midst of the earth, and one company cometh by way that beholdeth the oak." For this variation. And Gaal said again, "Lo, many people cometh down from the midst of the land, and one company, or one group, cometh along the road of the soothsayer's oak." But the King James Version obscures this. Why? Why is it the soothsayer's oak in one version, and then it's changed to this? And Gaul spake again and said, "See there come people down by the middle of the land, and another company come along by the plain of Meononim, whatever that means. This is a conspiracy. The fact is, many country people, the Welsh and Scots and Irish and Dane and Angle and Saxon and Jute and etc., were happily enjoying many ancient folkways and festivals that venerated the tree. During the late Middle Ages, when Wycliffe's Middle English version first appeared, and through to the rule of James I in the early 17th century, but times were all a-changing. A new Puritanism had grown up with all the other radical Christian sects that broke with the Roman Church. People who still followed the old ways, especially the eccentric old women who engaged in folk magic, were becoming the target of the mob, directed by shrill Puritans riling up the yokels to destroy the old, to turn against the enjoyment of feasting, music, dance, and the great celebrations in the ancient groves. By the time King James had passed on and his son Charles I was beheaded on a tree stump, the Puritans had taken over completely. Maniacs destroying churches, chopping at the graves of ancestors, and especially burning witches. Oh, they love that stuff, the devils. Fanatics can never go far enough. That's why they're fanatics. King James and his translators were already strongly against pagan worship and the terrible demons. James had even written his own clumsy works on demonology. But the Puritans were out for blood, out to destroy the very brio of life, which is why they canceled Christmas. Yes, they did this. In America as well. In New England. The Yule log, the mistletoe, the Christmas tree, the pine garland, the charming old Druidic folk customs all were banned, along with whatever festivals had not been already discarded by Henry VIII's takeover of the church. Why do they do that? Well, Henry David Thoreau understood why, as did John Muir, our American saint of the Sierra Nevada, as did a generation of poets in the 20th century who embraced Eastern mysticism and Oriental beliefs, because they believed these forms to be of greater natural purity. You have those converts to Buddhism, such as good old Gary Snyder, still with us at age 95, romanticized a religion that was made for the suffering masses, either in sustenance agriculture or the cruel global mega slum. Not for the people of wide open North America, a land where even today we keep vast tracts of wilderness and parkland and forest as our great national cathedrals, as Emerson and Muir demanded, as the champions and creators of the national parks understood, Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt. The soundscapes on this program are by Red Blue Black Silver. A couple years back on this radio program, I read a few lines from Henry David Thoreau, not from Walden, but from the essay Walking, which Thoreau wrote to be performed on the lecture circuit. And it wound up being what he performed for audiences more than any other piece of writing. He performed it on stage at the lectern a total of 10 times, but it was not published until after his death in 1862, when the Atlantic Monthly printed Walking in its June issue of that Civil War year. Well, I made a vague promise or threat that I would read some more of this essay someday. And as usual, time rushed away. It does that, especially on this end of life. But let's do it. Here's the introduction to Thoreau's Walking. A handful of pages, as our radio show does not last nearly as long as a New England lecture of the middle 19th century. I wish to speak a word for nature, for absolute freedom and wildness, as contrasted with a freedom and culture merely civil. To regard man as an inhabitant or a part and parcel of nature rather than a member of society. I wish to make an extreme statement. If so, I may make an emphatic one, for there are enough champions of civilization. The minister and the school committee and every one of you will take care of that. I have met with but one or two persons in the course of my life who understand the art of walking, that is, of taking walks, who had a genius, so to speak, for sauntering, which word is beautifully derived, quote, from idle people who roved about the country in the Middle Ages and asked charity under pretense of going à la santerre to the Holy Land, till the children exclaimed, there goes a saunterer. A saunterer. A Holy Lander. They who never go to the Holy Land in their walks, as they pretend, are indeed mere idlers and vagabonds. But they who do go there are saunterers in the good sense, such as I mean. Some, however, would derive the word from saunter, without land or a home, which therefore in the good sense will mean having no particular home, but equally at home everywhere. For this is the secret of successful sauntering. He who sits still in a house all the time may be the greatest vagrant of all, but the saunterer in the good sense is no more vagrant than the meandering river, which is all the while seeking the shortest course to the sea. But I prefer the first, which indeed is the most probable, for every walk is a sort of crusade preached by some Peter the Hermit in us to go forth and reconquer this holy land from the hands of the infidels. It is true, we are but faint-hearted crusaders, even the walkers nowadays, who undertake no persevering, never-ending enterprises. Our expeditions are but tours, and come round again at evening to the old hearthside from which we set out. Half the walk is but retracing our steps. We should go forth on the shortest walk, perchance, in the spirit of undying adventure, never to return, prepared to send back our embalmed hearts only as relics to our desolate kingdom. But if you are ready to leave father and mother, and brother and sister, and wife and child, and never see them again, if you have paid your debts and made your will and settled all your affairs and are a free man, then you are ready for a walk. To come down to my own experience, my companion and I, for I sometimes have a companion, take pleasure in fancying ourselves knights of a new, or rather an old, order. Not equestrians or chevaliers, not ritters or riders, but walkers. A still more ancient and honorable class, I trust. The chivalric and heroic spirit which once belonged to the rider seems now to reside in, or perchance to have subsided into, the walker. Not the knight-errant, but walker-errant. He is a sort of fourth estate, outside of church and state and people. We have felt that we almost alone hereabouts practice this noble art. Though, to tell the truth, at least if their own assertions are to be received, most of my townsmen would fain walk sometimes, as I do, but they cannot. No wealth can buy the requisite leisure, freedom, and independence which are the only capital in this profession. It comes only by the grace of God. It requires a direct dispensation from heaven to become a walker. You must be born into the family of the walkers. Some of my townsmen, it is true, can remember and have described to me some walks which they took some 10 years ago, in which they were so blessed as to lose themselves for half an hour in the woods. But I know very well that they have confined themselves to the highway ever since. Whatever pretensions they may make to belong to this select class, no doubt they were elevated for a moment as by the reminiscence of a previous state of existence, when even they were foresters and outlaws. When he came to Greenwood in a merry morning, there he heard notes small of birds' merry singing. I think that I cannot preserve my health and spirits unless I spend 4 hours a day at least, and it is commonly more than that, sauntering through the woods and over the hills and fields, absolutely free from all worldly engagements. You may safely say a penny for your thoughts, or £1,000. When sometimes I am reminded that the shopkeepers stay in their shops all day, sitting with crossed legs as if the legs were made to sit upon and not to stand or walk upon, I think that they deserve some credit for not having all committed suicide long ago. I, who cannot stay in my chamber for a single day without acquiring some rust, and when sometimes I have stolen forth for a walk at the 11th hour or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, too late to redeem the day when the shades of night were already beginning to be mingled with the daylight, have felt as if I had committed some sin to be atoned for. I confess that I am astonished at the power of endurance, to say nothing of the moral insensibility, of my neighbors who confine themselves to shops and offices the whole day. For weeks and months, aye, for years, almost together. I know not what manner of stuff they are of. Sitting there now at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, as if it were 3 o'clock in the morning. When a traveler asked Wordsworth's servant to show him her master's study, she answered, "Here is his library, but his study is out of doors." Living much out of doors in the sun and wind will no doubt produce a certain roughness of character, will cause a thicker cuticle to grow over some of the finer qualities of our nature, as on the face and hands, or as severe manual labor robs the hands of some of their delicacy of touch. So staying in the house, on the other hand, may produce a softness and smoothness, not to say thinness of skin, accompanied by an increased sensibility to certain impressions. When we walk, we naturally go to the fields and woods. What would become of us if we only walked in a garden or along a mall? Even some schools of philosophers have felt the necessity of importing the woods to themselves, since they did not go to the woods. They planted groves where they took ambulations and porticos open to the air. I am alarmed when it happens that I have walked a mile into the woods bodily without getting there in spirit. In my afternoon walk, I would forget my morning occupations and obligations to society. But the thought of some work will run in my head, and then I am not where my body is. I am out of my senses. What business have I in the woods if I am thinking of something out of the woods? I suspect myself, but I cannot help but shudder when I find myself so implicated, even in what are called good works. My vicinity affords many good walks, and though for many years I have walked almost every day, I have not yet exhausted them. An absolutely new prospect is a great happiness, and I can still get this any afternoon. 2 or 3 hours walking will carry me to as strange a country as I expect ever to see. Nowadays, almost all man's improvements, so-called, as the building of houses and the cutting down of the forest and all of the large trees, simply deform the landscape and make it more and more tame and cheap. A true people would begin by burning the fences and let the forest stand. Well, I could read that all night, but we're out of time. That's from Henry David Thoreau, Walking. So much good stuff in there, like this. I walk out into a nature as walked the old prophets and poets. Moses, Homer, Chaucer. Go read it yourself, or get somebody to read it to you. Maybe while you're walking. Thanks for listening to our program tonight. Visit us at desertoracle.com, where you can support the show as a patron or buy a couple of the few things I have left to sell. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio. Our second half today is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio produced by Ken Lane, May 22nd, 2020. I chose it because of the quirky title. It's a little natural and a little textual history capsule. See if you agree. Here is Wizards and Critters.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert and it just feels like something is happening, doesn't it? I was out on the trail yesterday and I saw a half dozen people. I saw some people I actually know. Everybody kept their usual desert people distance, of course. Only the dogs are allowed to break that protocol. But it was good to see some humans, good to talk to somebody besides the dog and the Roomba. We are semi-officially kind of opening up again, opening back to the world. The national park opened again a week or so back, and I think they must have announced it in skywriting over Los Angeles because the people sure came quick. Well, enjoy it while you can. This will be a very short tourist season with the usual triple-digit summer temperatures coming back fast, too. No lines on the trail when it's 110 degrees out. And, of course, nobody knows quite what to do. What's that? The county said we don't have to wear the duck mask now? Or only sometimes? In some places? I remember a couple of months ago finding out that, briefly, the San Bernardino County supervisors had made face masks required for people driving alone in their cars. Well, that got reversed pretty much before anybody ever heard about it. News is slow out here. In a county that reaches from the mountains of Los Angeles to the Colorado River, from Yucca Valley to Death Valley, Barstow to Havasu, Victorville to Vidal Junction. You can stand in San Bernardino County and throw a rock at the casino in Prim. But the security guys will probably run out and rough you up good. No matter what side of the state line you're on, only two kinds of cops you should not mess with. And that's the casino cops and the Area 51 cops. Both operate under their own special code, which is one of routine violence and insanity. But let's stay over by the wild things, where the wild things are. Let's enjoy the original pandemic vacation. Hiding out alone in the desert while the world ends.
Welcome to Joshua Tree National Park, what we call nature's thorn cup. While the law and the custom is to leave no trace, which makes it especially challenging for search and rescue, the fact of the matter is that you'll be going home with a little something from here. And not necessarily an STD, not at times like this. Unless you're hanging out behind the liquor store and get lucky, who knows? But what we mean, folks, is you're going home with a number of cactus needles and foxtails and burrs and other such things. And these will all be deep within the skin tissue around your ankles and possibly in your buttocks if you sat down in the wrong place, which is anywhere in the desert. Doctors recommend something to dull the constant pain. Something like a cup of whiskey. You can also take a hot bath and wait for the skin and muscle to loosen and fall from the bones. Add salt and chili powder to taste. We like to remind our visitors to this desert wonderland that each of the terrible little creatures who live under the rocks and somehow get into the toilet and also like to crawl inside your sleeping bag have just as much right to exist here as you do. Here on Earth, I mean. They have more right to be in the national park because they, like all native flora and fauna, were put here by the ancient desert gods so very long ago. You know, we've always had a powerful relationship with the snakes and the scorpions and the ravens and the coyote. Such things are etched onto the columns of the oldest archaeological site in the world. Back in the Romantic era, you didn't hear a lot of romantic poets going on about the splendor of the centipede or whatever. They tended to spill their rhapsody over the rare white roebuck, the fir tree. The spring blossoms. And not Sears roebuck, but the European roe deer, those hardy little deer of northwestern Europe. You can find them from Scotland to Scandinavia. But let's talk for a minute about Sears roebuck. Why not? Who's gonna stop us? We're on our own out here now. The inmates have taken over the asylum, as they say, except the inmates are park rangers. Something like that. It's a riddle. A sacred riddle. Alva Curtis Roebuck, born back in January 1864 in the small town of Lafayette, Indiana. Well, he went on to become half of the biggest name in retail history. About 11,000 souls occupied Lafayette when Roebuck was born there. Lafayette, now remember that places with Fay in the name are magic locations. And places named for the Lafayette, they are usually extra different. Their impact will be outsized. And the people of these strange places will be touched by something. Madness, a little bit. The inspired madness of the American magician in the case of Alva Curtis Roebuck. His specialty at the dawn of the 20th century was the magic lantern. The magic lantern came before the movie projector. It was basically a slide projector, but a slide projector would be a big deal before artificial electric light was something people could routinely use. Chemicals were used to cook up a real bright, intense firelight. For instance, to be in the limelight was to be in the intense illumination of stage lighting of the 1820s and beyond. lighting that was created by burning quicklime with an oxyhydrogen flame. That's what we mean by being in the limelight's glare. By the 18th century, magic lanterns were routinely used by stage magicians, traveling storytellers, the last of the old trovaires. The Norman variant of the troubadour of the south of France. The trovaires mixed up magic and theater, Norse epics, poetry and prose. They were a revered part of Norman life, unlike their troubadour cousins who were unseemly. Circus people types. Usually unwelcome in polite society. Well, the trovaires were right there with William, the Duke of Normandy, when he conquered England. They fought in the wars, they spent long nights drinking and feasting and telling tales, old ones and new. They could tell you about Roland and St. Bridget. They could tell you about the old gods of Albion, about last year's battle, and some wild story about demons and dragons and warhogs. It was a good job. A better job than being on a newspaper or magazine or content website or whatever they call what's left in 2020. Safer, at least. You might get a spear through your skull, but otherwise your job was pretty much safe for life. They had respect for the storytellers. You could make some money, maybe buy a little sod farm over in Iceland when you retire. Write down all the epics you remembered from drunkenly singing them around a fire, barbecue and beer night. So the magic lantern was a known tool of the illusionist, the performer. And they had them in the elaborate Masonic temples. Skeletons projected on the smoke, the elaborate ritual. You know, it was George Washington who made Lafayette a Mason at Valley Forge. As soon as the ritual was complete, he gave Lafayette a crucial military command. With a mail-order catalog from Sears and Roebuck, such wizard's tools became little luxuries for the home. Curious devices to entertain visitors, make the neighbors jealous. We tend to look at the past as a stack of old books or maybe a shelf of old VHS tapes and DVDs and CDRs as the eras get closer to our own. Each brief era, both stranded in time and assumed to be content with itself, with some sort of good old days. But people have been absolutely desperate for some home entertainment pretty much since the beginning of people. We can't get enough of it. Now, you know that gods and queens and pharaohs and philosophers would have people around for entertainment. Dancers, musicians, and clowns, ostriches on leashes. But regular people hired entertainers too. Before the time of top-down civilization, we lived in small groups and all sat around the fire at night together, telling stories and getting high, singing songs, goofing off, scaring the hell out of each other. It was the original way, the Garden of Eden, the earthly paradise. And even after the fall, when we let a few rule the many, the humblest home would hire musicians for a wedding or a feast or a funeral. And they'd keep that fiddler going even when they'd exceeded the home entertainment budget. And then it was time to pay the fiddler, and you can imagine the musicians were as skilled at getting paid as they were at playing their instruments. When the new religion came to Northern Europe, for example, the way to get the people to church was to throw a festival every 7 or 10 days. Work stopped, the ale flowed, and the musicians and pantomimes and puppet shows and traveling groups of actors and tumblers would all show up, paid for by this or that landlord. Maybe a little gift from the bishop. And people would wake up in the hay with their pants down and think, that was fun. I'll go to church next week too. More or less. That's not a complete history. But we all love some entertainment now and then. So when the big Sears Roebuck catalog starts offering these amusements to the general population by mail order, well, it was a big hit. Roebuck's department of the department store had all the gadgets, the watches and the jewelry, eventually record players and home movie projectors. Then he left Sears and invented the Woodstock typewriter for Emerson Typewriter Company, where he served as president and inventor. Samuel Clemens lost nearly his whole fortune trying to market an improved typewriter. But his machine did not actually work. It was like what's-her-name with the blood drop machine. But Roebuck's typewriter did what it was supposed to do, and so the Emerson Typewriter Company in Woodstock, Illinois, was, along with another typewriter company in town, making half the world's typewriters in the 1920s. Anyway, the stock market crash of 1929 forced Roebuck out of semi-retirement in Florida, back to work at Sears, and he wound up writing the story of Sears Roebuck and Company, the history of this American institution. And then he became a performer, a performing storyteller, traveling from one Sears store to the next, across the country, throughout the 1930s and into the 1940s. Always with an enthusiastic public turnout. I can't find any film clips of Alva Curtis Roebuck doing these history presentations, but I bet he used all the technology he helped create and market. Movie projectors and music players and optical illusions. Now, we'd mention the outsized influence of small towns with strange names. Lafayette, Indiana, a place that even today has about 72,000 people, is a fairly small town, a good hour from the next semi-big city. And listen to all these characters out of this one little town. There's Karen Black from Easy Rider and Nashville and Five Easy Pieces and Family Plot and Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean. Sidney Pollack, Oscar-winning director, famous actor. Axl Rose and Izzy Stradlin from Guns N' Roses. John Perdue, founder of Purdue University, which is the local college in Lafayette. And before the takeover, it was Shawnee territory. Prophet Rock is just north of town. The Battle of Tippecanoe, all that horror. Probably the saddest thing I read about the National Park reopening was the plea to drivers, to park visitors, to please keep an eye out for the wildlife, for tortoises, for snakes, for lizards, for bunnies, and baby ground squirrels. Because in these past months, with the national park closed, the wild animals who live there got accustomed to being able to cross the road in the place they live, their native habitat, without worrying about getting run over by an RV America rental or a Tesla or whatever. I don't know why we let cars in there at all. Why not just put in a ski lift that goes from Park Boulevard to 29 Palms and down to Cottonwood Spring on the south entrance? Solar-powered chairlift, pretty much right at ground level. Press a button when you want to stop and it stops. Off you go. Please don't step on the rattlesnakes. They're a lot smaller than you are. Most of them, anyway. Leave all the cars in a beautiful subterranean 10-story parking garage by the saloon in Coyote Corner. How fantastic would that be? Let's do that. Now let's real quick open up the mailbag. The Desert Oracle mailbag. I want to thank you all for the cards and letters and totems and trinkets. I got a nice package from Jason and Mandy Boland. And it says, Ken, we are big fans. Hope to make it out there soon. Jason Boland and the Stragglers are real good, rootsy, kind of highway, blacktop musical act. And if they've been out here, I have not seen the listing. Hopefully they will. We're going to start opening the bars and saloons and such things up before too long. Might get to see some honky-tonk again. I'll put a link up to Jason Boland and the Stragglers. I like this one, Dark and Dirty Mile. I also got a package from, is it Fact or Fiction or Fact and Fiction? I've lost my label here. Is the Indie Bookstore in Missoula, Montana. And the letter is from Chris Latray. Now, I know Chris Latray on Twitter, but I had never seen his book, One Sentence Journal, Short Poems and Essays. I said, thank you, Chris, for sending me that. I just flipped through that thing and I found about a half dozen one-sentence essays that hit the spot. Hello, Ken. Happy COVID-19 emancipation. If that day has also arrived for you there in the high desert, it has here in Montana, for better or worse, but I can't help but feel we are jumping the gun on this one. I suppose there are many people who think it makes us look tougher than everybody else. And if there are two things Montanans seem to care about, they are, one, looking tough, and two, counting how many generations their families have been here. It's asinine, but it's a beautiful place and I love it. Isolation suits me fine, but I confess your Back to the Bar Rooms episode with Jason P. Woodbury got me a little misty-eyed for the dives I've been missing. My reason for writing is to tell you I love what you're doing. I've been on board since the early days. My only regret is I can't listen on my device of choice, a little handheld AM/FM radio. Maybe someday. Now then Chris says, I've considered ripping off your entire concept, podcast, field guide, etc., and doing a northern version. But that's me at my best as an idea guy. It's the follow-through I struggle with. Well, Chris, I tell you what, it won't be ripping it off if we make a business arrangement. You know what I mean? The Intermountain West Oracle something or another. We'll talk about it when I get up there. Thanks for the stuff. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from Joshua Tree on Friday nights, locally from KCDZ 107.7 FM, and on a handful of West Coast public and community radio stations, including Pacifica Radios, KFCF 88.1 in Fresno in the Central Valley. Catch us on the radio when you're driving up Highway 99 or the 5 at night. Or listen on Snoqualmie Valley 104.9 FM. You know where I'm talking about. Winding up that two-lane from Carnation to Duval to Snoqualmie Falls, Washington State. What kind of fantastic trees they got growing up here? Not Joshua trees, that's for sure. Or listen on the new Lookout Station FM coming out of the hills over Burbank, California. You know, that's where K-Rock 1500 AM was back in the day in Burbank. Rodney on the Rock went on the air back in August of 1976. He's still on Sirius XM on Sunday nights these days. 6 p.m. West Coast time on Channel 21, The Underground Garage. You ever see that documentary about Rodney? Well, you can get the Desert Oracle podcast through all the usual outlets, and we have a Patreon set up as well. It's how we pay the bills, especially since the pandemic. Become a patron of Desert Oracle. There's even a new secret bonus episode up there for you. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, as always, for the soundscapes. Stay healthy out there. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
I think that that episode was the first time I ever heard about Chris Latre's book, The One Sentence Journal. I ordered the book because it was COVID time, and a couple more written by Latre. And not only was he in Bozeman this past week, but he also was at the workshop I attended. Whoa! My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for their work on Desert Oracle Radio, and to the good folks at KGVM who make space for this show. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Who's your favorite author? I'd love to hear from you. Let me know. You can call and leave me a message or text about that or anything else on your mind. That number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well, be kind to all critters, and sweet dreams. See you next week.